Yes, Mr. Jake Paul, I do accept. I know you called me out after your last fight against that bum, Nate Robinson. And listen, it's a pretty simple choice. I'm going to make a whole bunch of money to beat up a guy who is pretending to be an athlete. Because at the end of the day, that's what you're doing. And I know you may think I don't have too many stand-up skills, but also at the end of the day, I don't really need to. I'm a world-class athlete. I've won NCAA titles. I've been in the Olympics. I've won belts in multiple mixed martial arts organizations. And quite frankly, I'm impressed that you've deluded yourself into thinking you're an actual fighter, that you are really tough, that you can really box. It's quite impressive that beating up another YouTuber and beating up a boxer who looked like he had never been in the ring before makes you somehow good at boxing, because it doesn't. So yes, Jake, I accept. I will see you March 28th in Los Angeles, and I will humble you like millions of people want to see happen. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, a show where the news of the day is given some time, given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time listening to the show, we welcome you, we thank you, and get ready for something you've never experienced. I'm John Franklin, and I am joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. My Cleveland Browns are no longer the Cleveland Browns. They got multiple wins this year, so I'm feeling good. I'm feeling froggy fresh, and I'm looking forward to the episode today.
Something you may not know, Craig, is that I was starting to feel pretty good about my New York Giants until your Cleveland Browns showed up and put into that. So, listen, it is what it is. All right, Craig, on this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Misha's return, Ferguson's decline, and the new home of Showtime. But we begin with the Dana White victory lap. Craig, this week, Dana White released a video on his Twitter where he called out media members who doubted his response to the pandemic and was self-congratulatory on how successful 2020 was for him and the UFC. Craig, there's a lot to unpack here. What did you think when you saw this? Did it surprise you? And who do you think the true audience he was aiming for here was?
So I held off from watching this until tonight, and I did the Luke Thomas, Max Holloway, and Volkanovski too, where I didn't watch it 49 times, but I watched it 5 times. And it's a almost 5 minute long video. So 20 to 25 minutes I spent on my day today watching that right before the show. So it's still fairly fresh in my mind. Again, I'm back to paper notes. People with Fight Night Picks know me as the guy that used to type things. Now I'm back to paper notes. So I did write down some notes on this. It was weird. I still haven't unpacked it, and I still don't know what to think about it, because what Dana White did in this, as I continue to eat up your time, John Franklin, is he decided to go after Brian Campbell, who works with CBS Sports, who happens to carry Bellator. So let's just keep taking shots at BC. We're going to go after Big John and Josh Thompson, their podcast, both directly employed by Bellator. Brandon Wise, who's employed by CBS Sports, who covers Bellator. And it just snowballs from there. Josh Gross. And they kept picking up that Josh Gross picture from, I know he works for The Guardian. It looked like the picture that he has with Guardian. The UFC hasn't liked Josh Gross for what, 15 years?
It's been a minute.
And this is where it gets really complicated, because I'm an auxiliary member of the MMA Journalists Association. They haven't really done a whole lot. I keep it in my bio, but I don't really keep up with them. They had an email that came out last week, by the way. But Josh Gross has always been nice to me. I've reached out to him. I get in, actually, you know, again, behind the curtains. I've talked about this a couple times. I get into a sticky spot with a promoter at one point. And it was a really awkward spot that I was put in as a journalist at the time and a media member. And I reached out to Josh Gross, and he helped guide me through it. And I really appreciated his time and his insight. And if he could take that time with me, and I was a nothing at that point, I had been 4, maybe 5 months into MMA media. I didn't know what I was doing. And he helped me out. For a guy like that to help me out really showed me something. And on the flip side, as a fight fan, when I was just a fight fan, and I've told this one too, I was walking around Faneuil Hall, Quincy Market area in Boston, and Dana White's walking through Faneuil Hall. Well, I'm wearing a UFC hat. Well, what do? Hey, Dana. Oh, hey, guys. You going to the fights tomorrow? Yeah. Did you guys want a picture? Yeah, 100%. Where are you from? Oh, we're from New Brunswick. He goes, oh, okay. Yeah, I know where that is. Grew up in Maine, what have you. Had a great conversation, took pictures with us all, shook our hands. Really nice. Like, I couldn't believe how personable a guy like that was at the time as a fight fan. So as a fight fan, I can see this video one of two ways. A, man, this guy took us through hell or high water. when sports and the world was in a negative spot, this guy continued to shine a light, continued to bring a product out there. And from a guy who runs a business that relies on fights to be broadcast and held, it helped me out as well. But on the flip side, nobody had any idea how this pandemic was going to play out. So for them to pick and choose articles from early on in the pandemic, that's easy to do when hindsight's 2020. It's a weird piece for me because, again, I can see it from a lot of different sides, and I'm sure everybody can, and you can pick and choose your sides. But it's weird to kind of go after MMA media like this at the end of the year. That's like, why not focus on the good things that happen? Why not focus on your employees? Why not go that route rather than to just kind of, it's us against the media. And the media is bad.
Yeah, I think that he did that, but I think that he's, you know, he's Dana White, man. He's petty. He's self-congratulatory at times, and he's going to collect some bodies if he can. You know, this is the guy that who used to put promotions on tombstones when he put him out of business. So this is nothing new for him. I think that the people that were included in that video, let me start with this. I think you made a very important distinction here in that Dana would certainly relate to you differently as a fight fan than he would relate to you now as a member of the media. I think that because there's, you know, on the one hand, you're paying Dana's bills, and on the other hand, you're not. You know, it depends on what your view of the media is. You know, you and I have had a conversation. I believe everything before a fight is for Dana's benefit. Everything after a fight is for the site's benefit. So he's much more giving of his time before a fight than he would be after his fight, although he does stay in those scrums for a long time.
I was going to say, I have a question for you. I don't want to cut you off, but you bring up a really good point too, in the fact that, you know, everything before a fight is promotion. There's a lot of media networks and organizations that don't really see it that way. So if you're at one of those UFC press conferences, let's say it's Khabib and Conor, and you stand up, and there's three ways you can go about this. A, you can kiss their ass. You can walk up there and say, Mr. Dana White, really appreciate you. Thank you for making me all this money this year. Thanks for bringing these fights to my city. Everybody depends on it. Thank you so much. My question is for Conor. What does this fight mean to you? You can ask that. You can go, with the total other spectrum saying, Dana, you know, some of these COVID rules and things that are in place, you know, we see them broken on TV. We see corner men without their masks on. Again, maybe this happens, maybe it doesn't. This is just an example. You can go into that type of detail, or you can ask one straight down the line and say, hey, you know, we've got some fighters on this card that were brought in on short notice. What do you make of their chances on this one? If you're at a press conference like that, is it ever the time to ask those tough questions, or should you know kind of how to read the room? I guess I answered that one myself a little bit there at the end, but how do you view those press conferences yourself?
I think it depends on what your long-term goal is in terms of the business. If you want to be covering fights for a long time, then you got to play ball. And if you look, you said something earlier about Dana White's view of how negative the space is. Well, let's look at the space. All right. Five most relative MMA media members: Errol Hawani, Luke Thomas, Brett Okamoto, we'll say John Morgan and Kevin Ioli, right?
Yep.
Okamoto, Morgan, Ioli are all friends of the UFC. They all ask questions that are very, you know, Morgan does push it a little bit, but Okamoto pretty much does what he's asked to do. Kevin Ioli, same thing. Luke Thomas and Errol Hawani, who you could argue are the two biggest guys in the space, are very negative guys. They can be. They can be critical of the UFC. They can hold their feet to the fire. And Dana has a problem with that. So I think that, you know, Brian Campbell, yes, he's connected to Bellator, and he's Luke Thomas adjacent. So you can kind of take two guys out with one there. I just think that here's the one pushback to all the obviousness of the fact that this video is unnecessary. From Dana's perspective, I'll say one thing. Where were the guys writing the articles that he was right? Because I haven't seen them. I haven't seen those articles, and there certainly weren't as many of those as there were that he – listen, we talked about this on Early Stoppage. I was like, dude, what's he doing? Why is he trying to do this? There's a pandemic going on. And in the end, say what you want to say. Now, a lot of people are couching their beliefs by saying, I just wanted Dana to make sure there were COVID protocols in place. No. You said it was too dangerous for him to be putting on fights. You know, I know, because I said it was too dangerous for him to be putting on fights. I was wrong. So were they. This was a success on Dana's part. He did this as well as you can do it. You cannot say that Dana, that the NBA bubble was a success and Fight Island wasn't. You can't. They were both successful. And I don't see the people that are coming out to tell Dana he did this well. Now, should he need that? No, he shouldn't need that. He's far too successful. And he's, you know, you can't say you don't care about the media and then get mad when they don't write positive articles about you. You can't have it both ways. But I was wrong. So were these other guys. And it's time to sort of eat some crow here.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't want to harp on this the whole time, but I look at this and I go, you know, geez, when all this kicked off, nobody had any idea where we'd end up, how it would shake out. Was it going to be over in June? Was it going to be over at the end of the fall? Was it going to be over now? Was it going to drag into next year? Nobody had any idea. So at the very start, you were incredibly worried. If the NBA is going to shut down, if the NHL is going to shut down, we're not going to have a baseball season, then why is the UFC going after this? But as it went along, again, credit where credit's due, for the most part, it went pretty well, right? I mean, it was awkward when Jacare got COVID and they're fist bumping and then you go in for a hug with the next fighter. But overall, by and large, things went pretty well. So that's the thing. It just makes me feel weird.
To speak on Dana's perspective, listen, the video is completely unnecessary. Calling these guys out in the video is completely unnecessary. But I'll just ask you very simple questions, which I kind of already know the answers to, which is, did he keep MMA sites having content? Yes. Did he keep fighters getting paid? Yes. Did he give ESPN something to put on their channels and their platforms? Yes. Did he accomplish everything that he said he was going to accomplish at the beginning of this? Yes. Now, was it a very petty thing to make this video? Also, yes. But from his perspective, he said, listen, before you start trying to stop this thing, let me prove that I can do it. And I think it bothered him that there were people who were going out of their way, calling commissions, going out of their way to stop this, when he didn't even get a chance to put his stuff in place. They just thought he was going to be reckless. And from his perspective, he's like, you didn't even give me a chance to pull this off before you tried it. I think he took it very personally that people try to stop it. And this is the response.
It's an interesting response. You know, we could go on for a whole show about this. I like it. But John, let's go from one hot button issue to the next. And it's something that we kind of touched on last week, but one site was reporting on CM Punk and most of them were focused at that same time on Jake Paul's efforts to draw a boxing match with Dylan Danis. Well, it's not going to be a boxing match with Dylan Danis. It looks like he's going to draw Chase Hooper's dad and he's apparently accepted the call out. And I mean, Damian Maia's punching bag, Ben Askren, is in. So John, we could go a lot of different ways with this question. But my question to you, if Ben Askren hops in that boxing ring and gets absolutely bodied by Jake Paul, YouTuber, will that dilute MMA's brand on a global stage?
You know, it might, which is a concern. I think that, to be honest, unfair, I think that Ben Askren has been so summarily dismissed by the MMA space. Because of what happened against Maia, because of what happened, especially because of what happened against Till, I mean, I'm sorry, against Masvidal, that I think that beating Ben Askren is not going to accomplish what Jake Paul thinks it's going to accomplish. Listen, this kid's smart. He's calling out two types of people. One, people that will never take the fight, like Connor, who would outbox him. And two, people that would take the fight that couldn't outbox him. So it ends up being, you know, an interesting dynamic here. Like, he there's a chance he could outbox Dylan Danis. There's a chance he could outbox Ben Askren, based on what we know of them as strikers. Now, then becomes the question, is even the worst MMA striker still better than a civilian? Because by all intents and purposes, for all intents and purposes, this kid's a civilian. He's two fights in, but, you know, he's less of a civilian than I am, but more of a civilian than Ben Askren is, by and large. So the question is, what does that mean? This is really where we get to see, you know, because CM Punk was a civilian, and we saw where that went. So I don't know. I think that the Askren brand has been very, very damaged. So I do think that it would hurt the MMA product a little bit, but I think people are so down on – I mean, Aspen stock's so low right now.
The trouble is, you know, you look at the one championship UFC trade, Demetrius Johnson, Ben Askren. Who won on that trade, John? I mean, really, I think the UFC won it, oddly enough, because Ben Askren marketed the hell out of himself, got a win in his first fight, albeit controversial. And the reason why it worked out was because he was on a 5-second highlight reel for Jorge Masvidal that launched him into superstardom. That's how they won. Demetrius Johnson's competed, what, a couple of times for one championship? And we hear rumblings about it, and he's still considered a pound-for-pound great. And on that pound-for-pound tier right now, as it stands, but Ben Askren made more noise in his three UFC fights than Demetrius Johnson really made in his whole UFC career, and all the title defenses and everything, which is terrible to say. I think that Ben Askren having an affiliation with the UFC with a loss to Jake Paul actually dilutes MMA more than if he was just Ben Askren that fought with Bellator and won championship. Because now it's UFC vet Ben Askren. Nobody cares that he went 1-2. Nobody would care about the Jorge Masvidal thing. If you're a casual fan of combat sports, or if you're a YouTube fan and you know Jake Paul, if he beats a guy with that UFC asterisk on his name, whoa, Jake Paul can beat UFC fighters. That adds into the mix of video that came out today. And listen, again, I sent it over to you and I had a laugh at it. So where did it come from? Let's see. It was from Michael Morgan, Mike Woe TV. You know him, you love him on the YouTubes and on Twitter. But he took it from Jake Paul's, social medias. And Jake Paul's doing a Nate Diaz impression. He's doing a Conor McGregor impression, a Ben Askren impression. I thought it was pretty funny, right? But who's Jake Paul calling out? Conor McGregor, the fight's never going to happen. The Diaz brothers, if that fight happens, he's going to get whooped. I think he does. Even though he's way bigger, I think he still gets beat. But who are the most likely guys that are going to take the fight? Is Michael Bisping going to take the fight? Well, you saw his clapback on Twitter. No, he's got one eye. He's got a bad knee. He's retired. He's probably not going to take that fight. So who does that leave? Grappler number one or grappler number two? Do you go with Dylan Danis or Ben Askren? Those are both winnable fights. I was surprised where the odds open. What are they? Minus 180 Jake Paul, plus 150 Ben Askren. Jake Paul wins that fight.
The disrespect.
Jake Paul wins that fight all day. All day.
Yeah, I think in the end, they're both going to have to take a look and see. Like the most relevant thing that you said a lot of things are relevant. The most relevant thing you said is if Jake Paul wins, it's like when, I was talking to Shaquille about when you put a video out on YouTube and it says UFC fighter plays Cards Against Humanity. It's a more clickable thing than if it's just some regional guy or some kid that fights on the prelims. If you put UFC fighter in there, more people will click. If you say Jake Paul beat a UFC fighter, doesn't matter who. He beat a UFC fighter. So now, in a sense, someone said a long time ago, when you beat a fighter, you assume his resume. So you've in a sense, beaten everybody he's beaten in the public perception. Obviously, I guess it's MMA math, but that's the perception of it. So once he beats Ben Askren, you know, there's a world where some casual might think he could hang with Robbie Lawler. Like, that's just how this works in casual perception. All right, Craig, let's move on. Michael Bisping this week, speaking with Miami News, voiced his concern over the decline and by extension, the health of Tony Ferguson. Quoting Bisping here against Justin Gaethje, he got outstruck. And then against Charles Oliveira, he essentially, for the most part, got outgrappled. I'm kind of concerned for Tony Ferguson. Of course, he doesn't want my sympathy. He doesn't need my concern. He doesn't want me talking about him like this, but I'm just curious about where he's going to go now as a fighter. I do feel for him. It's hard when you're a guy like Tony or anybody in the UFC that's at the top of the food chain for so long, and you're one of the guys, you're one of the main guys in that division for so long, and then to see this fall from grace, if you will, to get dominated two times in a row. So the count's obviously worried about Ferguson. Craig, are you?
Yeah. Big time, because if he's not, he was competitive against Gaethje, but he took so much damage. He wasn't very competitive at all against Charles Oliveira. Yes, when he was on his back in the third round, it finally clicked that I have to be somewhat offensive off my back. But you and I remember this fight quite vividly because it just happened. Joe Rogan kept saying he's got to do something. He's got to do something. You know, he's on his back. Tony has a great game off his back. And it was essentially wolf tickets for two rounds until the third when he started to do stuff. You look at a fight against Justin Gaethje, interim champ. Again, you talk about it. You assume the resumes. Well, Justin Gaethje didn't do all that well against Khabib. How well would Tony really have done against him? And then you look at a fight in a perceived step down against Charles Oliveira. And I only say that because you look at the win streak that Charles Oliveira had. I don't think a win against Nick Lentz or Jared Gordon really holds a lot of water in 2020, but those were some of the wins that he had. We all knew deep down how good Charles Oliveira was, especially when he fought Kevin Lee in the spring. But it was tricky going into that one. He got dominated on the ground in that fight. He got dominated in the stand-up against Gaethje. So who else do you put poor Tony Ferguson up against? If you don't want him to get really hurt, but you want to still market him, but you don't give him a top 15 fighter, that's where it gets tricky. Michael Chandler gets Dan Hooker. Like, we have all these matchups that have been made here recently. Where does Tony Ferguson slot in? Do you put him up against RDA and just hope for the best? Do you put him up against Paul Felder or against Islam Makhachev? Because Makhachev is going to go in there and want to swing for the fences or pull one of his legs off so he can kind of get that win over to finally get that bump that he lost after not taking the fight against RDA or not having it materialize. So I'm worried about Tony Ferguson, because you got to think about it too. He was his own head coach going into that fight, and he fired his dietitian, and I know he made weight. But, like, these are wholesale changes at the end of your career, and you still want to fight snap jitsu, you know, champ shit only. You got to kind of realize, like, you're 35 years old. It's a young man's game in a division where young men thrive. And unless you're Masaran Duba, Francisco Trinaldo, you can't do it forever. So, yeah, I am quite worried about Tony Ferguson, and I don't know what you do with him next.
There's a lot of red flags, and I don't really want to get into this too much, but, like, he fired some cornermen people. He put out a tweet about it. And the red flags are all these different things that are him saying, this ain't my fault, right? He said he mentally broke Charles Oliveira. He's saying he's firing coaches. Just a lot of stuff that's coming out that just isn't him taking responsibility for the performance. I'm going to compare Tony Ferguson's career to the pandemic, which is odd, but here's why. Here's how I'm going to do it, is that he lost that Khabib fight so many times. Like, when you're in a pandemic and you want to, like, take your kid to Disneyland or something, and you just keep having to cancel it and cancel it and cancel it because of what's going on, at one point you're just kind of sitting around the house bummed out because you can't go to Disneyland. And I think that his career now is, I didn't get the fights I wanted when I should have gotten them. Now I'm relegated to getting these other fights. How do I get up for these fights if all winning these fights is going to do is get me back to where I should have been in the first place? Right? It's like, why did I lose ground? And then he sort of lost his motivation. So it's like, I got to fight Gaethje to get a shot at title. Well, I already got the shot at title. Why am I fighting this guy? And then you lose to Gaethje. It's like, all right, now I got to fight Charles Oliveira to get back to a fight with Gaethje to get back to a fight for the belt. It's like, dude, if you're from his perspective, you're like, I've already done this. I went on the best run in lightweight history that didn't result in a belt. And what do I have to show for it? I think he's just frustrated with his career. And he's struggling to find relevance. If it were me, if I was advising him, I'd say go to 170. Just because, why not? I mean, you spent so much time at 55. That's old news. It's like, listen, sometimes a change of scenery works. And I'm not saying that, listen, if the amount of damage this guy's taken, 170 isn't the place to be necessarily. But he needs something different. So leave the UFC. Tell Dana, say, listen, if you feel like cutting me, just let me go to Bellator. Let me walk out of here with my pride. Say I'm leaving on my own. Or whatever. He just needs something else, man. Him staying at 55 ain't the move.
Tony Ferguson, Randy Brown, 2021. Book it. Or Nico Price. All right, John. We move along, and a little bit of a follow-up here. The Rose Namajunas title discussion continues, and now we've heard from Thug Rose herself. She said, maybe there's a misconception out there that, whatever, I'm weak-minded or whatever, or I can't handle the pressures of being champion or whatever the fuck people say, Namajunas said. That's not true. That's what I live for. I'm the pressure cooker. What better reason to remind me why I fight than a family member passing away? So I'm super ready for all of that because that's what I am fighting for. John, it's a tricky one. So honestly, I mean, how do you feel about Rose's comments here? And what do you think we're going to see from her moving forward, especially early 2021? Do you think we're going to see her back?
I think so. I mean, she's just one of those people that, like, I don't know, man. She just always is trying to convince me she loves the sport, but everything she does seems like she doesn't love the sport. Like, she takes these breaks she's got some things going on, right? The whole Pat Barry situation, we've sort of touched on here and there. That's its own mess. But and hopefully everything's good with them and they're happy and all that. But, you know, the origin story isn't the best. But yeah, I think that she is about as talented of a fighter as you're going to see. And one of the things I was talking to Matt about on the recap show is one thing that makes Jose Aldo unique is that when he loses a fight, you almost can say, had he done this or had he done that, he might have won because he has such a deep skill set, right? He should have kicked more, or he should have went to the ground, or he should have, you know, went to the body or went to the head more. The guy can do so much. Rose is in that same category. She might not be to Jose's level, but she's a championship caliber fighter with a wildly diverse skill set. So people are always going to want her to get clicked in mentally. And I just don't see the mental acumen of a champion. And not everybody has to. I mean, you know, for some people, I've said this before, some people are built to be Olympians and some people are built to be world champions. And here's the difference between Olympian and world champion. An Olympian trains their whole life to go and get a gold medal. And once they got the gold medal, it's a wrap. You don't really defend the gold medals. I mean, you come back and you try and win another one, but you don't defend it necessarily. She won the belt, and that might have been enough for her. That might have been the destination, and she's done. Some people can keep a belt for 5-10 years. Some people getting there, and they just can never, you know, Holly Holm, got it, couldn't keep it. Misha Tate, got it, couldn't keep it. Now, listen, Amanda Nunes is the reason why they got it and couldn't keep it. But, you know what I'm saying? I think Misha was happy just to get it, and we'll get to Misha later, but maybe that's Rose. You know, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I don't know Rose Namajunas personally. All I can say to this is it's just disappointing. It sucks. I mean, as a fight fan, as somebody that covers the sport, you remember the two fights she had against Ioana, the saga against Jessica Andrade, it's just disappointing that we don't get to see her fight more often. So when this type of narrative takes over from the actual fighting, that's what you hate to see. I just wish we could see her, you know, early 2021. If not, so be it. But yeah, it's one of those things where I don't get my hopes up too high because I've been let down a number of times already. So for her, I just hope things go well. And, you know, as you know, to put the fight fan hat on, hopefully we get to see her compete early next year.
The good news is if we really want to get some insight, I had a tweet where somebody asked what should be the next NBA city. I put Seattle, and that tweet was liked by Trevor Whitman. So we're good. We're good. Trevor Whitman, I'm just going to ask him. I'll follow him and
can't
ask
believe,
him.
Can't believe you didn't say Vancouver.
Go ahead.
Douche. You didn't say Vancouver.
I did not. You're right. All right, Craig. Misha Tate spoke with friend of the show, James Lynch, this week. And she kind of slightly opened the door on a possible return to combat sports. Quoting Tate, we sure are quoting a lot this week. Quoting Tate, I have 6 fights left on my UFC contract, so if I wanted to fight, which I'm not, I wouldn't be able to fight anywhere else. So you wouldn't see me pop up and fight for one championship or anybody else because obviously I can't legally do that. I would like to grapple. And, you know, Cyborg did call me out to a grappling match. That piques my interest. Craig, given the state of women's MMA, are there any fights in the UFC for Misha Tate that you would find interesting? Has she been gone too long to maybe come? Like, how do you feel about her getting back in the octagon based on where we're at now?
If I think of the UFC women's bantamweight division, there's a few fights that I'd like to see. Marion Renault, Raquel Pennington, and then, you know, if she's able to win a fight against somebody, 10 to 15, Aspen Ladd maybe. But that's really it right now. I wouldn't want to see her fight Jermaine Durandamy, Holly Holm, you know, Amanda Nunes. Like, it's kind of tricky. So you got to kind of pick and choose your spots there in the top 15. Those are just some of the names that I go with. It's weird that it's like UFC or bust. I mean, I would have thought if you're involved with one championship in the front office and you retired, wouldn't you be able to kind of do whatever you want? But weird. Weird stuff.
Yeah. So for me, I always liked Misha Tate. I thought that she was like the antidote to Ronda Rousey in a lot of ways, just personally. Obviously not in the cage. But you and I love baseball, so let's use a baseball analogy here. I think Misha could fight. I'd like to see her in the UFC, but she can't hit the fastball anymore. So anybody that's going in there throwing heat, I don't want to see her with that person. right? So you, like, the names you said, Durandamy, Holm, Nunes, like, those folks, I got no interest in. But, you know, there's some – we talked in the past about poster fights. There's some poster fights. I wouldn't mind seeing Misha Tate and Juliana Pena on a poster for a lot
Kuniskaya?
Of reasons. You know, I think Misha – dude, I think Misha could headline a fight night against the right person. So maybe former she champ. Becomes the person that – yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to close the door on her coming back. I'd love to see her grapple Cyborg, and we'll get into some of the grappling later that went on recently. But, yeah, I'm interested in it.
All right, John, so let's move from one former champ into another. Another quotable, Daniel Cormier said he should have retired earlier because his back surgery really limited him. And the quote is, I think you can't live with regret. Living with regret is tough. It sucks because at the end of 2018, I was atop the world. I was the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I beat Stipe. I had won the champion. I had won back the light heavyweight championship. I defeated Derek Lewis. Anytime you're the first at anything in the UFC, it's massive. At the end of 2018, I was riding that wave. But then my back was just so bad. John, if you were in Daniel Cormier's shoes at the end of 2018, what would you have done? Or what do you think Daniel Cormier should have done?
Well, you know how it goes. Hindsight's 2020. And I think this was the big issue for Daniel Cormier. The Brock Lesnar fight was just sitting out there. And that's not something you can say no to, because bad back or no bad back, and this is going to sound really weird when talking about Brock Lesnar, I think that he just goes and collects that check and just takes Brock out. I think he settles a lot of scores. I think that everything that maybe – and I don't want to take away from what Brock – or what Daniel Cormier was as a wrestler. But, you know, Brock was this bigger deal, as far as I know, nationally. Then Cormier didn't really get famous or whatever until he got older. I think that settles a lot of scores with Brock Lesnar. He's a better UFC champion than he was. You can make the argument we talked about earlier. Sometimes something happens and a lot of dominoes fall. I think people would start thinking that Cormier was a better wrestler in their minds, legacy wise, if he out wrestled Brock in the octagon. So I just think that was just too appealing of a fight to walk away from. So I agree with him. That would have been a better way to go out. But I just don't think – I think it's hard to say no to a Brock fight when Brock is not what Brock used to be.
You said nationally it would have been a big draw. John, where did Brock Lesnar fight out of when he fought Mark Hunt?
He wasn't
– Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Keep Regina weird. What's the Regina saying again?
Experience Regina. I've got the hoodie over there. I have family that lives in Regina, Saskatchewan. Pretty cool spot on the prairies, and that's all I'll say about good old Regina. But if I really focus in on this Cormier thing, you're right. I mean, hindsight is it wasn't so much 2020 as it was 2018. But in that case, you beat Derek Lewis, you got a bad back. Yeah, you hold out for that Lesnar fight, and that was pretty much all you could do. You know, if he's really sour and it limited him, so what? Again, it's easier to say that now, but man, how much fun would that fight have been covering that? Like, it would have been a circus. I had a neighbor at the time that didn't follow MMA whatsoever. He knocked on my door and he said, Brock Lesnar is going to fight Daniel Cormier. He's going to beat the shit out of him. Right. And I kind of laughed. I was like, yep, yeah, you're right. Brock Lesnar is going to beat him. Mm-hmm.
And that's why you can't walk away from that fight if you're Daniel Cormier.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, let's move on to sparring sessions. This really should have been in the rundown, but I wanted to ask you a question. It's kind of a debatable question, so I saved it sparring sessions. Craig, Anthony Pettis has said on his social media he's going to explore free agency, which has led many to speculate where his next stop will be. Now, that's a conversation for another day. Or moreover, it's a conversation Matt and I already had, so check out the recap show because Matt completely has it laid out for where
Anthony Pettis should go. Yeah, but he was wrong.
Okay, that's fair. So here's the question I have for you. Where he ends up, again, is a different story. But do you think that Pettis is leaving the UFC the right way? And do you think more people will follow his lead, meaning leaving off a win?
Yeah, and I don't want to come off sounding like a dickhead. We kind of touched on this even before the show even started. But as the show started, Anthony Pettis signed with the PFL. So it's news to us going into this show that this happened. But I like your question. I actually like the way that Anthony Pettis left. You know, he put on a competitive fight against Alex Morono. I know the scores are 29-28. If there was another minute and a half, I think he would have finished Alex Morono. He had the spinning kick that landed flush on the forehead. Morono was rocked. And he put on a good performance for Anthony Pettis. But he did that classic thing. And there's a few sports where it really happens. Basketball, I mean, Montrezl Harrell did it last year with the Clippers. He padded his stats. He got a nice payday with the Lakers. Like, it happens. You see professional athletes, when it's contract year, they always overperform. They get the big deal, and then they just kind of, the numbers kind of settle back down again. Anthony Pettis kind of did that. Now, good fight against Cerrone. The fights before that, not so bad. The Wonder Boy fight, you can focus on some of the losses, but they were against top-notch competition. I'm fine with the way that he left. He penned that nice letter about, leaving the UFC. I didn't see Joe Silva's name in there. He wasn't one of the ones that got thanked, but Mick Maynard was there, Sean Shelby, Dana White, the Fertitta brothers, and so on and so forth. I think the way that he left was fine. You know, he kind of left the door open a little bit, and then it closed, and then today it was PFL. And to kind of focus, and I know you said you didn't want to, but to focus where he's going, I mean, we've been critical of the PFL. There's another big name, Rory McDonald and, you know, Anthony Pettis. And now we get these former champions. So the PFL's kind of got something going. And, you know, if it ended up Natan Schultz and Anthony Smith or Anthony Pettis at the end of a lightweight season, or Rory McDonald and Anthony Pettis, I mean, I know it's a Bellator play, but those are some big names right there.
No, I agree. And I think that, you know, the thing that frustrates me the most about Anthony Pettis is that, and this is going to sound weird, this guy is like the biggest star that didn't know how to be a star in a way. Like, he does the Showtime kick. He's on the Wheaties box. He's a champion. I mean, dude, he wrote this letter like he's LeBron or something. Like, hey, it's been fun. You know, dude, you're like at this stage in the game, what's he, 15th ranked, like, wherever he is, he's top 10 maybe, whatever. And he wrote it like he's just hanging up the gloves, act like he's Randy Couture or something. And it's like, he has all these things where it's like, dude, you're a big deal. Like, you really are. You're a good-looking kid. You fight like a madman on the floor and on the feet. He should have been the biggest star in MMA history. And I just don't – his brother fight. Like, it's just all these things. I only bring all that up to say, is PFL – PFL's making every right move except for putting a cage together – and turning on cameras. They're doing everything except for that. So
they will.
At some point, maybe. When?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like your point. There's one thing, you know, as an observer of Anthony Pettis that always kind of put me off a little bit. And then I watched the performances. It was just the attitude. It was like, yep, I'm here. I'm the best. Win or lose, it's going to be the same thing every time. And again, it's kind of like Tony Ferguson kind of does the same thing, right? Like, he shows up, I'm the best, I'm going to win. And maybe you need to get yourself psyched up and you have to think that way. Maybe you, and Matt makes a really good point, so I'll give it to him. He overacts like Daniel Day-Lewis. He's going to drink your milkshake, right? So Anthony Pettis, just it's that thing. I was WBC champ, I was so young. I was UFC champ, I was so young. Like, I'm the best thing since sliced bread, but it never really won anybody over.
But see, that's the thing, Greg, which is what frustrates me about him, is that he does that and then he walks it back. He doesn't go all the way with it. Where a guy like Connor does it, you have to be willing to do it enough for some people to hate you. And not quietly hate you, like Craig Allen saying, you know the thing about Pettis that's frustrating? You don't want people to be frustrated by you. You want them to hate you. Connor has people that hate him. That's how you make money. Chael had people that hated him. You know, all these fighters have – John Jones has people that just hate him. That's the play. Like, you have to be polarizing. And he is cocky but not polarizing. And I think that's the reason why he couldn't quite market it. His fans his fans don't love him. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody's getting an Anthony Pettis tattoo. And his detractors don't hate him. He's still kind of in the middle a little bit.
So this is when I go full heel turn, right?
Yeah.
That's the play. Yeah. All right.
That's the play. All right, Craig. Could not be more excited. The time has come. I want to try something new this week, new this year. As we kick off our end of year awards for the site, for the channel, I wanted to try something new to start that. I want to do three all MMA teams. They do it in basketball. They have all NBA, first team, second team, third team. I'll give you a little bit of my logic behind this, and I'll let you do what you will with the teams. It's a little bit pound for pound rankings. It's a little bit how good of a year they had. So I'm just going to give you guys a spoiler alert here. So basically all the champions are represented, because in all NBA, you got to be a certain kind of caliber player even to be considered for all NBA. CJ McCollum ain't hopping into all NBA. Beginning of the year, we already kind of have an idea who's going to be all NBA. Okay? So it's all champions, except for the fact that we ran out of champions. So the third team has the fighters I thought were closest to the championship, to the belt. After that, I'll hit you with my MVP of MMA. It's different than Fighter of the Year. It's different than Champ of the Year, which we'll get into in our year of end of year awards. This is the fighter who I feel is most important to the sport right now. He's the guy that that should be getting paid the most money. He's the guy that if he went to another promotion and was traded, you'd have to ask for the most. That's who this person is, or lady. Don't want to tip anybody off. All right, Craig, let's start with the all MMA third team. I got my champions are Petr Yan and Wiley Zhang. And my non-champions are Francis Ngannou, Aljamain Sterling, Dustin Poirier. Now, you can pull that apart, but you don't know the other two teams. So let's do the other two teams, and I'll let you just make your way through the entirety of the whole thing.
So everybody else has to be a champ on the other two, which makes it tricky for me, because you look at a third team, you got Poirier, crazy fight against Hooker, one of the fight of the year candidates out there. I know a lot of people, for some reason, that's an unpopular pick, but normally in award shows, you have to have five and then you cut down from there. So obviously Wiley Zhang and Joanna was one, if not two. Figueiredo Moreno's up there too. Poirier Hooker had a hell of a fight. Francis Ngannou continues to roll through guys. Aljamain Sterling's looked amazing. Look at the fight against Corey Sandhagen. And then to me, Petr Yan and Zhang Weili, that's where it gets confusing, because for Zhang Weili, you have to have her on here. She had a fight of the year, but she only fought once this year. And for Petr Yan, he fought Jose Aldo, but he only fought once this year. I mean, it's a great win, right?
So but I'm with you. So as we go along, let's see who you'd move around. And the point that you made that I found interesting was you can make a case for Brandon Moreno. Because he's close, I kept him off because he was a little young. So let's move on to the second team.
Yeah.
Second team, all MMA. I have Kamaru Usman, John Jones, Amanda Nunes, Jan Blachowicz, and Valentina Shevchenko. Obviously, the level's a little bit higher here. Jones is not a champion, but he did vacate the belt. So I put him above Petr Yan and Wiley Zhang, who are active champions, because he chose to get rid of the belt, and he's moving up a division. Talk to me about the second team.
Yeah, but he hasn't moved up a division. I mean, he's training up a division, but he hasn't moved. That's where it gets tricky. For me, I would probably pop Kamaru Usman down to the third team, and I bring up Zhang Weili again, just based on the fact that she had a fight of the year contender, and Kamaru Usman definitely didn't. The fight against Colby Covington was last year, so the fight against Jorge Masvidal was this summer. That's where it gets tricky for me. And I know a lot of people too, we got to comment on this. The fact that, you know, the World MMA Awards went really squirrely. Have you seen who they had for, some of their picks?
No.
It's fights from last year, but it's because they didn't have an award ceremony at the end of the year. So the fight against Covington was December 14th, 2019. I know they have that considered as a fight of the year. They're going off of last year's stuff. So for Kamaru Usman, the fight against Masvidal, while it drew well, it was kind of a layup. You could see it from a mile away. So again, for me, I'd put him third tier. I'd have Zhang Weili up on the second team. But apart from that, I'm fine with the team. Jan Blachowicz had a hell of a year. He really did. His stock rose so much. The Polish power, it's there. Valentina continues to run through the division. I know she lost a round against Jennifer Maia, so be it. Amanda Nunes, female GOAT. People think I'm a joker for saying she's in my top five pound for pound, regardless of gender, and I keep saying that. But I mean that, like, I'm dead serious. And John Jones, that's tricky. I'll leave him where he is. I'll agree.
It's tricky because you can make an argument that he should be off these lists altogether, and Moreno could be in. Now, here's where the first team gets interesting, because we have Amanda Nunes on the second team. So I'm going to give you the first team, and we'll see if we got any more movement. The first team is Davison Figueiredo, Stipe Miocic, Israel Adesanya, Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Alexander Volkanovski. Obviously, they're the five champions who are left. No surprises there. What do you think?
Again, I know why you have Stipe on there. We've talked about this off air, and I don't know if I 100% agree with you, but, you know, I'll leave that for another day. Next week, maybe. Devastator Figueroa, he deserves to be there, and I'll make a case for that till the cows come home. Adesanya, say what you will about the Romero fight. You saw what happened in the Paulo Costa fight. I'm fine with that. The guy's the biggest star in the sport. I think he is anyway. Khabib left for retirement and beat the wheels off Justin Gaethje, who was the heir apparent to that title. And Alexander Volkanovski, again, we didn't see him very often. I didn't see him as much as I'd like to. And Luke Thomas watched his last fight 49 times. But that fight against Max Holloway was a great one. And Volkanovski's really set himself up well. I'm fine with this first team all MMA here. And all right, one other thing that I want to say, John, this was an all UFC three team, but it's difficult. And we haven't gotten into the rest of our awards, and we will. They're coming up, not on this show, but they will with Fight Night Picks. Make me a case for a lot of other fighters. Again, we open this show kind of looking at both sides of the coin of Dana White's tirade against MMA media. I wouldn't even call it that. So hopefully that doesn't get clipped out of all of this, but we really looked at it both ways. Video. Oh, well, some dork with a Browns jersey on, Craig Allen. But again, credit where credit's due. The UFC's put on the most fights. The UFC's had fighters in a lot of big fights, and other organizations really haven't. So, you know, yes, could I say Patricio Pitbull should be on one of these lists? Could I say Phil DeFries deserves to be on these lists? Sure, I could, but it's really tricky. Again, on your third team, you could have Khamzat Chimaev there. You could have Kevin Holland there. You can make those cases. I won't, but you could. So, again, it is tricky.
It is, and that's why I wanted to put this list together, and I wanted to sort of birth this. So that moving forward, I knew that if I did the first one, that things, Bellator, all these other promotions will be underrepresented because of me, who I am. And I wanted to start that discussion. So Craig's right. If you guys want to get into the comments and tell us who should be on this, this is MMA. I chose to make it a UFC thing because of who I am. If you think there's somebody that deserves to be on this all MMA team over Aljamain Sterling or over, you know, some of the Francis Ngannou, then make that case for us. I'm fine with that. But this is me doing this. Okay, so let's move on to the most valuable fighter. For me, it was an easy one. Slam dunk. The most valuable fighter in all of MMA is Israel Adesanya. He brings the most things to the table. He has the best combination of skills and marketability. If there's anybody in this sport who should be paid the most for what they bring to the table, it should be Israel Adesanya. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you're telling a guy who's in total agreement, who's been saying this for a while. I mean, you go back to last year. Kevin Holland is following the Israel Adesanya blueprint of just winning and winning and winning and finishing guys and then backing it up with the talk. And then once he gets to the top, if Kevin Holland can beat the champ, I mean, holy smokes. Wow. Like, who wouldn't want to see that fight? Kevin Holland, Israel Adesanya. I'd be down for it. But you look at the building blocks that Israel Adesanya put together. And this is you want an inside baseball? The fans of Fight Night Picks, you made it this far. John, we were talking about our awards. I went after the MMA in the Afternoon show that myself and Ty O'Keefe used to host in 2018. I'm going to give you the list that we had at the time for a male fighter of the year. We had Anthony Smith. He had beaten Rashad Evans and Shogun and finished it off by beating, you can't see him off screen, but Volkan Oezdemir. Kevin Bellingham from ONE Championship had a crazy fight against Bibiano Fernandez, big brood there. Roberto Soldic with KSW. Israel Adesanya won the award because he won what? He went 4-0 in the UFC that year and had two finishes. Kevin Holland's on that trail, but he hasn't won the belt. He hasn't defended the belt. He hasn't backed this up. Kevin Holland isn't the one that's on the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones pay-per-view. And listen, we open the show talking about, again, tough topic, and then Jake Paul, Ben Askren. Adesanya's right in that discussion. Adesanya was there when Jake Paul beat Nate Robinson. So for me, Adesanya, most valuable fighter, represents the sport incredibly well. I totally agree with you on this one.
And I think the reason why, you know, why this was birthed was because, which is an odd choice of words, which yes, I used twice, is that he's not the fighter of the year. And you can make an argument he wasn't the champ of the year, you know, because depending on how bullish you are on Davis and Figueiredo, you know, if you take away the fact that he did, okay, if we throw the fact that he missed weight out of the equation, which you can't, but if you did throw it out, he won the belt, defended it, defended it again, defended it again. That's, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a more impressive champion in this given year than that. He's not fighter of the year because that's Holland or Chimaev or somebody like, or maybe Figueiredo. But he's the guy that if someone came to Dana White with an open checkbook and they wanted to take a fighter, they're writing the biggest check for Adesanya. That's his value. All right, Craig. But yeah, a lot, guys, listen, this is what I really want some interaction on this. I really want to hear from you in the comments. I'm sure you guys all have opinions. So let's hear them. All right, Craig, speaking of Davidson Figueiredo, let's move on to For the Gram. Davidson Figueiredo believes he won all rounds against Brandon Moreno. He wants a rematch to, quote, leave no doubt. What are your thoughts on this statement?
I mean, this is the part where you clip in our conversation with Brandon Moreno from what happens here between myself, Matt Allen, Matt Perino, and Marcus Deegan. So we'll clip that in. But I want to see a rematch. I was the one that said Assassin Baby 2020 champ for like 2 years, and Matt did too. So, you know, I want to see it again. I thought it was a great fight. I don't think he won every round, though. I really don't think that he won every round. I thought he won, what, 3 of them? Yeah, I thought he won 3 of them, and then he had the point deduction, so it was 47-47. That was how I scored it in real time. I know the judges scored it totally differently, but yeah, I don't think that he won every round.
The thing we missed out on is we should have had bumper stickers made that said, like, looking like political stickers that were like Assassin, Baby, the next to each other, on top of each other.
Yeah, I think that's when you have that on your back bumper, you get tailed by a black and white car, and sometimes the red and blue lights come on.
There you go. That's probably why it's better that we didn't do it. I agree. I mean, I think I agree with you, not Figueiredo. I think that I think it was a close fight. I do think I agree with him that there should be a rematch to leave no doubt, because I scored it for Moreno. I think I gave him the math would probably be a draw, but I think I gave him 2-3-4, 2-3-4, and he didn't win 5, and he didn't win 1. For me. But again, I was watching it. Rogan started on his narrative of, like, you know, again, I struggle with even as many fights as I've watched in differentiating between is someone overachieving or is somebody winning a fight? Someone doing better than I thought they were going to do, or are they actually winning this fight? And I think that Moreno was somewhere between overachieving and winning the fight. All right, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, TJ Dillashaw, Killashaw, EPOashaw has been called out by Jose Aldo and Rob Font. Which fight do you prefer? Which fight do you think Dillashaw should prefer?
Can't stop addicted to the shindig. See, everybody loves my singing. What's the more sellable fight, John Franklin?
Jose Aldo.
Yeah, exactly. That's the pick. It's got to be the pick. I love Rob Font, but who puts butts in seats? Or in this case, who puts pop and popcorn in the couch seats? It's Jose Aldo, TJ Dillashaw all day. That's a fight that I'd sooner see from a purist standpoint. Maybe you want to see Rob Font. I'd much sooner see Jose Aldo and TJ Dillashaw. I think that holds a lot more water at the top end of that division. I think it sells more. I think that's the fight the UFC. Yeah, the UFC be more inclined to put that fight together.
Let me ask you a question. This is going to be a weird way to put it. I agree with everything you just said, so I'm just going to ask you another question. Which one's a more of a tune-up fight?
Rob Font.
You think Jose Aldo's a harder night for TJ Dillashaw than Rob Font is? That's what I'm asking. Who's a harder night for Dillashaw?
Yeah, did you see how easy Marlon Moraes was able to wrestle against Rob Font until he got tired? Yeah, TJ Dillashaw is one of the best wrestlers in MMA, and a lot of people say I'm crazy for saying that. Have you even watched a TJ Dillashaw fight? Now I know that comes across me being a dickhead, and so be it, but if you want to clip that, Craig said. But yeah, and unfortunate because, again, New England Cartel looks amazing right now. Jose Aldo's been competitive even in the fights that he's lost. The Volkanovski fight wasn't all that great. The fight against Moraes was close. The fight against Jan. Yeah, Jan's kind of the Floyd Mayweather that gives rounds away until he wants to put you away. But I think the tune-up fight would be more the Rob Font fight.
Let's move on to postings of the book. Craig Greg Jackson is considering a run at a Congress seat that's going to be vacated by a Biden appointee. I know that you love nothing if not New Mexico politics. So I'll just ask you straight up. Even though you love New Mexico politics, I'll keep it MMA for you. How do you think Greg Jackson wanting to sort of transition to political life would affect John Jones in his run at heavyweight gold or his fight with Adesanya? Does Greg Jackson moving on to other things affect John Jones's fighting future?
Is Tito Ortiz good at city council in Huntington Beach? I mean, I don't know a whole lot about New Mexico politics. I'm assuming you have to wear a bolo tie and turquoise, right?
I would imagine, yeah.
Is that the requirement? Is it like Tucson in New Mexico?
I think so. No, New Mexico, when I went to New Mexico's weird, man. It's like you go to Albuquerque and you go to a bar and you just see a bunch of old guys that you really know can handle themselves. You're like, oh, that guy'd be a long night to fight. He's like 50. He's like oddly strong. He's like oddly cut up. And you're like,
John, how old are you?
I'm 43, but I'm not.
He's like 50.
Well, no, I know. But when in fairness, the last time I was in Albuquerque was like 2010. So I wasn't 43 then. I was 33 then. So a 50-year-old was 17 years my senior. Now he's only 7. So what do you think? Do you think it's going to affect Jones?
I don't think so. I mean, why? Like politically, is it going to affect him or will it affect his not training?
Not having his coach around, Craig.
I'm sure he works with Brandon Gibson and the boys too. I don't know. I you know, you look at some of these mega gyms. If you're Mike Brown, who are you training with? Are you training with the amateurs? You're probably training with the pros. But when you're training with the pros, and listen, Mike Brown's a poor example because the guy, you know, did or is doing, so he will be doing the 2-week quarantine in Japan to get ready for Ryzen's New Year's Eve fight between Horiguchi and Asakura. So Mike Brown, again, poor example. But some of those mega coaches, you know, when you're at the pinnacle of the sport, when you're John Jones, you're pound for pound great, then it becomes, okay, is it the fighter and their talent or is it the coach at that point? And I got to think, you know, John Jones probably kind of steers the ship on his own to a certain degree. I don't know how much he's going to gain from Greg Jackson at this point in his career. And again, maybe Greg Jackson's this whiz with film study. I don't know him personally, but I don't think it's going to affect him that much.
I don't think so either. And the one thing that we never talk about when we talk about John Jones, which we really should, because there's just so much other stuff to talk about. John Jones might have one of the best minds for MMA there is. So in the same way, like, you know, when you talk to Mike Tyson about boxing, who does he always bring up? He doesn't bring up Teddy Atlas. He brings up Customato. Well, Customato died relatively early in Mike Tyson's career, but that's still the guy who he draws from all his knowledge of boxing. And like, that's his father, if you will, of boxing. So I'm sure that everything that John Jones would absorb from Greg Jackson, he's already absorbed. And he knows it, and he's putting it into, you know, he might morph certain things, and it might be nice to have Jackson around in the corner because, you know, he does that thing where he goes, okay, let's take some deep breath. He's like he's like Bob Ross in the corner. But I think that'd be nice to have, but I think that he knows everything that he needs to know by now. All right, Craig, let's move on to a new segment. It's a quick one. Last week we did This Just In. There is no really This Just In except for the Pettis news, which we just broke. This one's called The Flurry. Couple quick ones, quick questions, quick answers. Junior Dos Santos said he will not accept the result of the Ciryl Gane fight because he thought the strike was illegal. Your thoughts?
It's like that old Michael Jordan meme. Stop it. Like, what are you doing? No.
Get yourself some help.
Accept it. Yeah.
Dana White wants to start next year with a triple header. It's going to be a Saturday fight, a Wednesday fight. And a Saturday fight, here are the main events. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Leon Edwards versus Khamzat Chimaev. Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier. The first two are free. The last one's obviously a pay-per-view. I mean, can you think of a better way to start next year?
No, and I mean, you know, we're going to talk about it later, but pretty big network going to be involved with Fight Night. So, and there's not going to be a card on the 30th from what I found out. So, yeah, I'm cool with it. That's great.
You know, one of the things that not a lot of people talk about is the year that Conor McGregor beat Eddie Alvarez was back when they were still doing International Fight Weeks where it was like three cards and there was like a tough finale and a fight night and then the pay-per-view. That was a lot of fun. I mean, that was like each night you had, I think the way it broke down, it was Thursday was the tough finale, or Wednesday was either Wednesday or Thursday was the finale of tough. Then the fight night was Thursday or Friday, and obviously the pay-per-view was Saturday. But that was, like I said, a lot of fun. And I think they should do more of this. The only thing missing here, I mean, they got Cater. The only thing missing here is if you want to get all the stars in alignment, is Kevin Holland. I mean, you want to start the year with all the guys that are the hottest guys to start with, it's Holland. Maybe it's Figueredo would be the only thing I can see missing, but that's a great way to start. All right, Chris Weidman said he could see the UFC cutting him. Do you agree with him?
I mean, he had a lot of things to say. Again, shouts to a friend of the show, James Lynch, for breaking it down. I don't know, man. I guess. I mean, you know, he barely beat Omari Akhmedov. I don't know how much water that holds. So, yeah, if he loses again, he probably makes a big chunk of change. So, yeah, I could see them cutting him.
All right, let's move on to Submission Underground. It happened last week. Here are the results. We'll do them quickly for the ones that are relevant. Cerrone submitted RDA. There was some controversy there. Ryan Bader defeated Anthony Johnson via escape time. Craig Jones defeated Brett Primus. Kevin Casey defeated Gabriel Checo. Felicia Spencer lost by submission to Amanda Lowen. Do you care about any of this? Do you, the Submission Underground, even on your radar, or what do you think?
I go back and watch it when I need to do tape study before a fight. Unfortunate that it's not like I'm watching a lot of fight tape for Amanda Lowen, Craig Jones, or Kevin Casey. But again, it's good to know who these MMA fighters are matched up against when they go into grappling tournaments. So for me to look and see that Brent Primus went, you know, 3 minutes and 50 seconds against Craig Jones, Brent Primus, good grappler. I already knew that, but still, he got Michael Chandler's back in their second fight and almost submitted him. You know, Cerrone beating RDA, neat. Again, controversy. Satoshi Ishii, what a weird career that guy's had straight up. Satoshi Ishii, in my mind, I think he's great, but was he? Weird. So, yeah, it's one of those things. I used to say this a lot, and I've kind of moved away from it. John, this will get a smile out of you, hopefully. Does he get my dick hard? No. So it is what it is. I don't get all that excited about grappling tournaments. I like grappling with striking, but it's one of those things that, yes, I'll go back and watch it getting ready for a fight.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it's weird. For
you agree that it doesn't get my dick hard?
Yeah, I agree about that. That's what I took from what you said. No, I agree that I'm very interested in submission grappling, Submission Underground specifically, when I'm watching it. I just can't, and then when the poster comes out, I'm like, oh, wow, that's cool. I just can't get into it as like an appointment viewing. When I decide to watch it, I've never been let down, right? Yeah. And when I see who's fighting, I'm never let down. So Chael's running a really good promotion there. He just can't figure out a way to get my ass there when it's happening. And that's the one thing, that's maybe a me thing and not a Chael thing, but that's my one piece of like disconnection from the products.
Yeah, to me, it's got, this is going to sound kind of meathead and casual. To me, it's got to be mixed martial arts, because like before the UFC event on the weekend, I watched the Glory prelims on the Badr Hari card and it was fun. But does it get me excited? Well, no. The only reason I watched it was because I was on YouTube anyway, and it was live. It's just like watching Muay Thai. I like watching Muay Thai, but again, is it appointment viewing? Like you said, no.
The interesting thing with other promotions, and I'll use Submission Underground as an example, although I do think Chael does better with this than most do, or like Muay Thai, or like Glory. The one thing the UFC has over all of them, and this is because they have a huge roster and a huge budget, is that they tell better stories. So, like, if Chael could link each of his cards together, hold on. If Chael could link all of his cards together and there were champions and, like, but it's just, like, if the only thing bringing me to the TV is who's the best grappler of these two guys, I struggle with it. But if it's, like, okay, tonight Craig Jones and Brent Primus are fighting for this belt, or tonight Cerrone and RDA are fighting, and then they're also booked in the UFC. Like, if they could figure out a way to give me some more storylines, that'd be fun, but I just can't. When
you gotta watch M1 Global or KSW or ONE Championship, they tell stories all the time before the fights.
That's fair. So obviously, I'm hypocritical in that way.
Sorry,
it's okay. I have no problem having my hypocrisy exposed. All right, Craig, let's move on to start the conversation. So listen, we talked about this a little bit earlier. You alluded to it. UFC is targeting ABC as where they're going to do UFC Fight Island 7. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
It'll be the biggest network that the UFC's ever been on. They've been on Fox or whatever, but yeah, the ABC is like one of the big three. So here's my question for you. It's kind of a simple one, but it's a little complex. At this stage in the game, okay, and if it's just money, we can have the money conversation. At this stage in the game, what is success for the UFC anymore? What is the to-do list? What are the things they're trying to check off? Because they've had huge cards. They've you know, closed down other promotions. They've had licensing deals, and they've had, like, all these things that other leagues do in their timeline, and some that other leagues have done that they don't want to do, like labor negotiations and all that. What's left for the UFC to be a signal of having a good year other than huge pay-per-views and lots of money?
What gets their dick hard, John? That's a good question. So I threw this one out there on Reddit because Shoutstar r/MMA, and I threw it out there an hour ago. We have 16 comments, and there's some really good ones out there. You know, throwing one out here from Synth Tictum 2. The flag is, this is not my bus. The viewership numbers on network TV are the next hurdle. Who cares if they're on ABC if only 2 million viewers? Something like that doesn't boost their profile. Just makes them a pay-per-view circus only. They need to get to a point where they get enough viewers that networks want to pay them more to air a card than what they make in pay-per-view buys. They need eyeballs for that. Being on network TV is just a test to see if they were a sport the viewers care enough to watch about. I would counter on that one. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go.
Okay, so my counter to that would be, the world we live in, what's success on network TV anymore? Like, meaning, is the success that this guy's talking about, like, that they're American Idol, where, like, they're on three times a week and they have, do these huge numbers, that they're Monday Night Football? Like, those are the only things that really do numbers these days. Like, football games, American Idol, that kind, is that what they're saying?
Next, the comment under that is, I mean, being on ABC, this is from Balder the Good. The flair is dat dagastini dank. I mean, being on ABC is already massive. Sure, if they tank, then it's not a good sign. But this is Disney signing off on the UFC, not just ESPN. ESPN has plenty of random-ass sports they show. I saw the axe-throwing championship on the other day. They're never going to show that or something like Cornhole National Championship on ABC. That's a good point. I think, you know, you definitely build your brand if you're moving up to a network like that. Again, ABC still holds water up here in the Great White North. We have ABC, NBC, all of those C's, CNN, Fox. We have all those things, kind of. To me, it's a big deal. And I mean, there's a lot of really good comments in here. I know, you know, there's some cynics or some people that are disappointed or some, you know, there's probably some MMA media members here that are upset and they can hide behind something that's not their byline and their picture. So one of the comments here from Titan is back is pay as little as they can and sell their shows based on the brand name, not the fighters. Listen, man, I'm pretty critical about this stuff too, right? Like, if you don't have to pay a man or woman $250,000 to fight, but with that money, you can sign 12 to 15 fighters and have 8 and 8 or 10 and 10. Why not? I understand that. From a business perspective, it makes more sense. And if you can sign somebody for 10 to 10 that can have just exciting a fight and make as many impressions online as a fighter that's going to make 250 because they were a former champ, then go ahead and do it. But, you know, the real heart of the question, what is success to them now? I think it's just continuing to get recognized on that major scale. I think that really the UFC wants to be the NBA at this point. Where else do you go? NBA or NFL?
Because the NFL. I think for me, it's that the only goal they have left is to be a real force advertising-wise, meaning that you are on a big network, like Dancing with the Stars, they only get big advertisers, and they pay a lot of money to be on Dancing with the Stars. Same thing with American Idol, same thing with The Voice. Like, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for something that is equated to, if we put, like, when they put a football game on, nobody wants to go against a football game, right? That's why great shows are not on Monday nights. As a matter of fact, the reason why Thursday night football exists is because Thursday is such a big TV viewing night. At some point, someone said, well, what if we put a football game on Thursday? Could it be successful, or would it, you know, would it be outshined by all the shows that are on Thursdays traditionally? And it does well. So I guess for me, that's the next thing. And the other big thing I think would be having the big pay-per-view of the, or the big, not pay-per-view, the big card of the year be on ABC, and it do not Super Bowl numbers, but like something in that realm, you know, like a half of the Super Bowl numbers, a third of the Super Bowl numbers, where like this is, I mean, obviously in a perfect world, you would be on Super Bowl weekend on that Saturday, and you're the lead into the game. So people are watching your fight on Saturday, Super Bowl on Sunday.
It's funny, you know, just the stupid things, us being in different countries, whatever. And Matt always says this on all the shows. He goes, the North American audience. You're always saying the national audience. But if I just tune it back and I say the North American audience, and if let's, you know, Canada, United States, Mexico, what are your big sports? NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, you have four. And what's the fifth? Soccer over here, maybe. So let's say MLS and the other leagues, maybe that's five. What else would you throw in there?
I mean, that's it. NASCAR.
NASCAR? That's a limited. Yeah, I guess. No Jeff Gordon anymore. Oh, sometimes. And he does commentary, but he doesn't look like the Jeff that I knew when I grew up. I love Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon's my guy. DuPont. And listen, I'd buy DuPont paint now. The Tyvek stuff for the side of your house got to be DuPont. Anyway.
Jeff Gordon's still selling paint.
Pepsi. Only drank Pepsi. Jeff Gordon. My point is, again, wearing a Browns jersey. You look at the big sports there. The UFC wants to have a seat at that table. And like you said, how do you get a seat at that table? Probably advertising revenue. That's probably the best way that you can get yourself into that form of relevance, because then DuPont's pushing UFC. Then you walk into a paint store and there's Cody Garbrandt holding a can of paint. Like when I was a kid and had a cardboard cutout of Jeff Gordon holding a Quaker State bottle and John Franklin. I'm going to let you in on something. If my wife hears this, she's going to laugh. I could never say Quaker State as a little kid. I called it Quinker Stink.
Well, here we are.
Quinker Stink. Here I am. Quaker State.
I think the thing that the UFC has going for it, that all these other sports don't have going for it, is there's no season. Exactly. So that you can advertise the whole entire year. You can. So the one argument would be, well, there's 30 NBA teams and there's 82 games. So if you do the math there, that's a lot of games. Yeah, but it's only 82 days or 100 days, whatever it is. Let's say the whole season is 150 days with the playoffs, with everything. That's still only half the year, right? NFL, 16 weeks. You know, let's say it's 22 weeks with the playoffs or 24 weeks. Still only half the year. So that's why all these sports are trying to figure out ways to extend their calendar, right? When do we do the draft? When do we do the playoffs? When do we start the year? You know, NFL has been the most successful at figuring out how to almost be a year-round sport with the combines, with the, you know, it's like the season ends, and then it's like the draft or the combine, the draft, and all that. And then you have a little bit before minicamp starts. But the UFC doesn't have to worry about that. The UFC, if they get marketed properly and get the right amount of stars, they can, and plus they can determine when their stars are going to play.
Yeah.
And where they're going to play, you know? So the biggest card of the year, they can put their stars on it. You can't put Tom Brady in the Super Bowl every year. He has to earn it. You can put Israel Adesanya in the biggest card of the year. Now, does he have to earn that spot as well? Yeah, in a sense. So, yeah, I think that's that, like you said, the next thing is a seat at the big table. And I don't know if they have that yet, but that's what they want.
Let's see.
All right, guys. There you have it. Another Fight Night Picks. Early stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at S. Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, before you say something witty, talk a little bit about what's going to be going on with the lack of fights for the next couple weeks. What do you guys got? What's brewing? Well,
if you're a Fight Night Picks fan, you've probably seen us feverishly filling up the YouTube community tab section, which John Franklin didn't know existed until this week. I'm just kidding. But I've really been filling it up. I want to get the input of the fans on some of these different items that we have up for grabs. So, I mean, if we're talking about who's the fighter of the year, what was the fight of the year? Who was the analyst of the year? That one got pretty competitive and pretty lively in the comment section. So try and find those. You know, they're over there in that community tab, and we utilize that quite a bit. And yeah, it's a little bit of a vehicle to get into the shows or find us over on Instagram. I know there's some people that get a little sour on Saturdays that I don't put every single fight in the YouTube community tab. And maybe I will, but then it's almost like filling up somebody's mentions. You're just going to get tired of seeing it. So, you know, it's a little bit of a vehicle to find us on Instagram. But for these awards that we have coming out, find us in the community tab section. Maybe, and not even maybe, we're going to have some awards that you're not going to see in the community tab section, some special stuff coming out. So make sure you check that out. I'm really looking forward to these awards. I mean, again, my first experience was a couple of years ago, MMA in the afternoons, and we had some wacky awards then. Maybe you're going to see some of those with us this year, but I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it was a weird year. It was a crazy year. Again, at the end of the year, and Craig Allen, he said this, I'm glad that we at least had something that we could talk about. I never would have anticipated the channel growing this much. And it's 100% due in part to the fact that we had fights and things to talk about. So kudos where they need to go. Take that however you want to take that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the awards that are coming up.
I'm as well. It's
and
be fun.
All MMA teams. That was crazy.
You liked it. Admit it, you liked that more than you thought you were going to.
I did.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. We'll see you for the awards. Talk to you later. Peace.